on the Cal Poly campus since 1940 in most capacities, from instructor, department head, dean, vice president, presidential assistant. Since last May, he has met and discussed with most of the, if not all, of the faculty and student groups on the theme of this conference. During the summer, he met and discussed the same theme with the community leaders. This time, our president, Robert E. Kennedy.
Thank you very much, Corwin, for that nice introduction. I'm impressed. The group on the stage is as good looking as the group in the audience. If Shakespeare were here with us today, I'm sure he would delight in quoting from his own As You Like It, noting as he looked around that all the world's a stage and all the men and women merely players. And he would surely add, they have their exits and their entrances, and one man in his time plays many parts. It is true, as you have heard, that this man in his time has played many parts, but never before with such a large supporting cast. I shall do my best to face the audience, wherever it is. Although I have an uneasy feeling about the man standing behind me in the wings with a hook on the long pole. While I consider this my entrance speech in my new role, it may be that your planning committee anticipates my early exit in true Shakespearean style, sans teeth, sans eyes, sans taste, sans everything. Speaking of the planning committee, you should know that I met with the committee early in the summer, and I tried to talk them out of having me appear in the kickoff spot of this two-day fall conference. I told them I would prefer to speak last, after I had heard everyone else on the program. The committee, with obvious malice aforethought, unanimously disagreed with me and insisted, in a matter designed to ruin what could have been a relaxed summer, you must speak first, because everyone will be hanging on your every word, taking notes to use in the meetings which follow. On later reflection, I wondered if they hadn't said, "We'll hang you on every word." While you may not believe this, the prospects of preparing this talk today weighed heavily on me. As the day approached, I became increasingly concerned that I would not be able to communicate in this sterile sending without receiving atmosphere, which is created when a man stands on a rostrum and tries to talk with electronic amplification to 700 colleagues. If we could just talk together, with questions asked when our words and meanings are unclear, we could come closer to my objective of having a continuing dialogue with you on the question, what can we build if we work together? Those of you in the high-priced seat portion of the theater, please bear with me for a moment while I address myself to our new colleagues, the nearly 150 persons now on the stage in the supporting cast. Welcome to Cal Poly. You join us at a time in the history of this college which can be considered a new era. While I have been a part of Cal Poly for 27 years, I am a freshman college president. We are freshmen together. I'm sure you feel some of the same insecurity I feel in a new position. You have the additional problem of learning your way around the campus, meeting new people, learning about your department, your school, or your division, the duties you have been assigned. Perhaps you are new in the community, too. I'm sure the insecurity I feel is primarily an imagined thing, because I could not ask for any more cooperation and support than I have been receiving in the slightly less than 5 months since I was appointed president. The vice presidents, the deans, the department heads, the faculty members, staff members, student leaders, and community leaders have made me feel that we have the best team possible in this campus and in this community. These people will make you feel the same way, I'm sure. I'm hopeful that your department head and department colleagues already have made you feel warmly welcome to this organization. As you look out over this audience in front of you, be reassured that these men and women are anxious to have you become an integral, happy part of the Cal Poly organization. Don't hesitate to talk to anyone. We are all anxious to provide you with whatever information will be helpful to you. At the end of this first week, you'll know a great deal about Cal Poly, but your senior colleagues will be working with you for many weeks to come to make certain that your orientation is complete. Now to the question, what can we build if we work together? That's very good. Everybody thinks that's water, but it's really vodka because I... Good. You know, who is it that does that on TV? There is always a danger that a person will become carried away with an idea, will talk about it over and over again, finally boring everyone he knows with the continuous repetition of that single idea. Soon even his best friends will begin to wonder if he can whistle only one tune. That's a definite disadvantage, but I weighted against the principle for effectiveness in communications and decided to keep on asking the question, what can we build if we work together? When I started early in May, meeting with faculty, staff, and student groups, I asked that question continuously. Some 50 or more groups on campus told me of their aspirations for the future, what we might build together. They were most cooperative, creative, and helpful. In August, Mrs. Kennedy and I, with the help of several students from the Home Economics Department and the Ornamental Horticulture Department, entertained nearly 200 community leaders in a series of dessert buffets in the Home Economics patio and dining room. We included wives of the members of the various groups, the City Council, County Board of Supervisors, San Luis Obispo Unified School District Board, Cuesta College Board, school officials from the various high schools, Chamber of Commerce Board of Directors, judges, and representatives of the press, radio, and television. Each group was small enough so that we could discuss the same topic, what can we build if we work together? Many of these community leaders have written subsequently, indicating pleasure that we were able to discuss mutual problems and opportunities in an atmosphere conducive to two-way communications. While I'm not certain that my visits with faculty, staff, and student groups during May and early June generated optimum communications, I'll assume responsibility for the static that developed. Admittedly, with some groups I talked too much and I didn't listen enough. I hope these groups will have me back. But despite lack of listening skill on my part, my desire to provide opportunity for everyone to participate in the various phases of the decision-making process must have been recognized as a sincere effort on my part. In a recent publication of one of your campus employee organizations, I read this comment about the theme question. If President Kennedy is asking for help in answering that question, then responsible action on the part of the rest of us must be the second step. I most certainly am asking for help, and I'll welcome it from all quarters. Early in June, I talked to the staff club. In that presentation, I said that the college president, who concentrates on the two major aspects of his job, will be one, developing and maintaining an effective organization, and that includes having the right people in the right jobs, and two, developing and maintaining an effective communication system. Later, as I was contemplating some implications of this responsibility, I concluded that individuals who are members of the various constituent groups in a college expect the president to set up an organization which will give each individual maximum opportunity to innovate, and at the same time will provide each individual maximum protection from the innovations of others. The problem is how to maintain order and unity and yet not quench the quest for creativity or the search for innovation. Is such an organization an impossible utopia? In the pluralism of our nation's political democracy, we try to protect the rights of the individual and of minority groups, even if it is the majority which decides the rules by which both the majority and the minority must live. If our political democracy does not work perfectly in the world outside the campus walls, that is the best reason for striving mightily to make our campus a model of how it should work. And that takes working together. And that brings me to the we and the question, what can we build if we work together? Colleges and universities have five major constituent bodies: students, faculty, non-academic staff, administrators, and trustees. Each of these constituent groups has certain formal organizational units and subunits. At Cal Poly, for example, each department has a departmental committee, about 36 academic and about 20 non-academic. Each school and each division has its council of department heads. That adds seven. There is the faculty staff council with its several standing committees. There are half a dozen employee organizations, considered in a technical sense as being extra legal or outside the formal structure, but having important influence on the formal structure. The Associated Students Incorporated, with over 8,000 students, has a student affairs council, a student executive cabinet, a student judiciary committee, and hundreds of departmental clubs, hobby, and special interest clubs. It is not hard to visualize 200 or more sub-unit organizations within the organization known as Cal Poly. Now, this is as it should be, because it brings like-minded people together to discuss, to carry on a dialogue, to concern themselves about mutual problems. It does not mean that these organizations are a threat to the basic objectives of the institution. If the two-way communication system does not work effectively, however, the objectives of an extra-legal organization will grow too far apart from the objectives of the formal organization. There's bound to be some conflict and resulting tension when representatives of an informal organization do not perceive the task of the organization in the same light as representatives of the formal structure. On the other hand, research has shown that where there is absolutely no conflict between the formal and the informal structure, the organization will not achieve at maximum level. It is as though George Haslein's friend Buckminster Fuller's theory of tension of structural members in a tetrahedron, which push against each other to hold up his geodesic dome, was transferable as a theory to organizational structure. Philosopher T.V. Smith believes that to allow all sorts of organizations in society is to furnish avenues of growth. He said, organizations of like-mindedness provide stimulation, arrange for criticism, and promote both growth and felicity. We live in a richly pluralistic society. In no more important regard does a democratic society differ from a totalitarian one than in this: friendliness towards all sorts of organizations. Men in any organization eventually will find they have some differences in purposes. It's true because they're human beings with individual differences of the human species. Organizations of like-minded men are likely to find themselves from time to time at odds with other organizations of like-minded who were attracted for different purposes. You are all aware, I know, that even in the most peaceful families, sometimes we need a referee to keep peace. While T.V. Smith's theories were not designed to apply to a college structure, they do apply to society in general. And an organization, the smaller bespeaks a pattern for the larger, and vice versa. He added the open mind, the reasonable spirit, the cooperative trust, the kindly gesture. These are the insignia of a fruitful society. Our insistence upon group pluralism facilitates resolution of conflict between the unlike-minded, for such organizations achieve pieces of common purpose in a sea of dissidents. Where there exists only the state and the individual, the distance is too great to be negotiated. But where organizations multiply into the thousands, there already are well-established beachheads for conciliation. Now, while I do not advocate the establishment of thousands of organizations at Cal Poly, the hundreds that we now have provide a beachhead to achieve conciliation when the purposes of the individual seem to be contrary to the purposes of the total formal organization. the we in the theme question, as I am certain you have guessed by now, means everyone who was formally and informally a part of the organization known as Cal Poly. In addition to including all of the members of all of the informal and formal organizations within the five basic constituent groups which I mentioned earlier, students, faculty, non-academic, administrators, and trustees, the we could include some other individuals and groups, not constituent parts of the college, but certainly official enough to warrant their being considered among those with whom we should work if we were to build successfully. For example, the Coordinating Council for Higher Education, the legislature, and the governor. Every individual in the all-inclusive term we will profit by the advancement of each individual. We all profit by the advancement of each. No longer true as a statement at one time considered it an economic principle, the art of making oneself rich is to make one's neighbor poor. We elevate ourselves by elevating others. Friday, I had the opportunity of speaking to approximately 150 student counselors at what we call the Summit Conference held at Cambria. I was concerned about talking to these student counselors because they were going to be the advisors to what is referred to here as WOW clubs, meaning Week of Welcome. And there are about 65 of these clubs busily engaged now in orienting each club 30 new students with three counselors, student counselors. And I was interested in giving to those senior counselors some advice for the new students. And I want to quote from a statement that I made to them on Friday. I was particularly pleased this spring at Poly Royal to receive from Assemblyman William Ketchum a framed copy of the joint resolution passed by the legislature commending the Cal Poly student body for its use of appropriate procedures and bringing to the attention of the legislature the opinions of our students on a number of controversial issues. As you know, campus elections were held to determine democratically the opinion of the students towards some issues which at other campuses were the alleged causes of wild demonstrations. The state legislature, which provides the funds to operate Cal Poly, expressed in that resolution its appreciation for the attitude shown by our students and for your willingness to use the machinery of a political democracy to express the will of the majority and the relative position of the minority. I further told these students, it is important that you student leaders be aware of the proper official channels available for the airing of any grievance of any student or group of students. Where there is doubt as to the proper channel, it is a good advice to refer the problem to the dean of students or the president of the student body. Neither student leaders, faculty, nor administrators should condone an appeal directed over the heads of the representative student body organization in the form of mass demonstration, strikes, threatened force or violence, so-called passive resistance, or civil disobedience. Use the machinery of your political democracy. Now that we have explained who is the we in our theme question, let's consider the how of working together. I mentioned earlier that a college president should devote himself principally to two basic functions. The second being the development and maintenance of an effective communication system without which there can be no effective decision-making process. In my opinion, the central controversy in higher education between faculty, administrators, and governing boards has not to do with who is going to make the ultimate decision, although you might think so if all you knew on the subject was what you read in the newspapers. Rather, the real issue is the degree of participation in the decision-making process, not who has the authority to permit his name to be rubber-stamped on the final approval statement or document. And yet, faculty representatives and presidents working on this program will go around and around trying to settle the semantics of such phrases as maximum degree of faculty authority and responsibility, or ultimate authority and responsibility of the president, or as much authority and responsibility as is practicable. The argument is never over what decisions are to be made by whom, but how will the process work? I'm certain that most of you have read about Marshall McLuhan, whether or not you have read his recent book, The Medium is the Massage. Fortune magazine described McLuhan as one of the major intellectual influences of our time. In his most recent book, he summed up the essence of his idea about the importance of the medium with this statement, and I quote, "Societies have always been shaped more by the nature of the media by which men communicate than by the content of the communication." McLuhan also pointed out that he and other students of media are persistently attacked for concentrating on means or processes rather than on substance. Let's concentrate for a moment on describing the process for effective decision-making, which is dependent upon effective two-way communications. Students of administrative theory have been working for the past 20 years with field study research on the most effective decision-making systems being used in large organizations. You've probably heard me say it before, and you'll probably hear me say it again. The theory that has proved itself in practice to be an excellent guideline to follow in obtaining optimum cooperation from members of groups and working toward goals and objectives is the participation theory. There are many ways to say it, but simply it is said this way: a group's participation or lack of it in making decisions affects its willingness to accept the outcome. You all have had experience, I know, that verifies the truth of this observation. The key to the effectiveness of any large, complex organization lies in its ability to break its organization down into small groups, which are then tied effectively to the overall organization by an overlapping group participation system of work units. In order to achieve the benefit of improved decision-making through improved communications, we have implemented at Cal Poly several changes in organizational relationships. Descriptive materials have been developed to explain the changes, and these will be made available through your department heads very shortly. A president's council, an academic council, and an administrative council will operate with representatives on each of them from the faculty staff council and from the Associated Students Incorporated. The deans and division heads are now reporting directly to me. The academic vice president and the administrative vice president are concentrating on functional planning and staff services to the entire college operations. We have delegated to the deans and division heads, for example, authority to make initial appointments to ranking class and library positions. Your deans and division heads will explain the process, which is greatly simplified over past procedures. We will continue to work to eliminate unnecessary paperwork. We are striving to have authority for final decision placed at the level where the decision is really made. We are seeking to implement a concept of delegating an optimum level of faculty staff participation in the decision-making process. In matters which affect students primarily, we shall seek to make student involvement in the decision-making process actual and not theoretical. Student body officers have been invited to sit with faculty and staff representatives as non-voting ex officio members on key administrative decision-making and recommending bodies. I have encouraged the chairman of the Faculty Staff Council to consider the addition of student representatives on key committees of that important consultative and recommending body. I have asked the Foundation Board of Directors to invite regularly to its meetings representatives not only of the faculty and staff, but also of the Associated Students Incorporated. How do we make this process of working together really work? Let me give you an example. A faculty member filed a grievance in the spring because he was not promoted to associate professor rank. He had received the recommendation of his departmental colleagues and his department head. The grievance was based on a denial by administrative officers of a promotion because there were not sufficient positions released to the department at the time promotion recommendations were processed. Although positions were subsequently released to the department, making the promotion potentially possible, the grievance was denied because a college regulation established a January census date after which no applications for promotion would be considered. When the grievance came to my desk finally, I asked why the particular cutoff date had been established. There were no good reasons now, although there may well have been in some years past. The rule was set aside and the promotion was made. The obstructing regulation has been referred to the instructional deans and to the faculty staff council for review and recommendation for change. To everything there is a season, a time to ask a question and a time to ask why. This is a new era at Cal Poly. As one Cal Poly organization bulletin stated, a time for a fresh new start. I've asked the vice presidents, the deans, the division heads, and other administrative personnel to look at every procedure, every process that we use administratively and ask themselves, why do we do it this way? I'm not trying to complicate their jobs. I'm not trying to make anyone feel insecure, but I'm trying to avoid what I think is a very great danger in a large organization, a continuously building up of rules and regulations and a failure to periodically evaluate why. If we don't make this self-analysis, we are as guilty of the sins of bureaucracy as the most blatant example ever set forth in his inimitable style by C. Northcote Parkinson, Raffles Professor of History at the University of Malaya. You are all aware, I'm sure, that it was this gentleman who discovered what is now referred to in administrative literature as the first Parkinson Law. Work expands so as to fill the time available for its completion. Parkinson also has thrown doubt on the stability of an economy based upon reading each other's minutes. Seriously, I am concerned when students report to me that faculty and staff frequently tell them that something can't be done. To the request for why, students as frequently receive the response, there's no reason, it's just an administrative rule. This, then, is time to ask why. It should always be appropriate to ask why if the question is asked in good faith and is not a rhetorical device used by a dissident minority designed to continuously disrupt the operations agreed to by the majority. Let's sum up the how we're going to work together. We're going to do it by opening up the channels for two-way communication, by involving appropriately representatives of all constituent groups on key policy formulating, consultative, and recommending bodies. We're going to work hard together to develop an effective decision-making process using the overlapping group participation system, which is considered the most modern pattern of management for any large organization. We have the processes for dealing democratically with most problems. If there are oversights in the processes, machinery exists for correcting them. May we have the wisdom and understanding to use those processes with fairness to all. Yesterday, Sunday afternoon, I had the privilege of standing in the same position and speaking to a group of parents, mostly of new students. It was interesting that we did it the same way. We hadn't meant to do it the same way. The rostrum was to be down there, and the curtain was down, and everything was in anticipation of maybe a few hundred at the most parents. This was the first time we'd asked parents to come at the time that their new students were brought to the campus. And I was to deliver a message to the parents. And we had a tremendous number of people here. And so we asked that the curtains be drawn, and we put the chairs up here, and almost as many people on the stage then as now. And it was a great thrill to see the great interest that these parents have in their new students, our new students. I want to quote from a statement that I made to the parents yesterday. Frequently I'm asked, what is the most significant difference between Cal Poly and other state colleges in California? It's easy to say that the most important difference is our emphasis on the applied fields of agriculture, engineering, business, home economics, together with the closely related supporting fields of the physical sciences, natural sciences, and mathematics. I said it's easy. It's a little difficult to say it, but you understand what I mean. This statement is true. We do emphasize these fields, but it doesn't account for the success of fine programs in the social sciences, English, speech, education, physical education, technical arts, and many others. For years, we've been seeking men and women for our faculty who wanted to devote themselves primarily to teaching in the classroom and laboratory. Our faculty members are promoted to our highest ranks because of their excellence as teachers. Many of our faculty do important research, publish in professional journals, write textbooks, help industry as consultants. But everyone teaches, and we have good student-teacher relationships, and that makes Cal Poly an environment where people work together, sharing in the learning experience. To me, today, that is what differentiates Cal Poly from some other institutions of higher education. And now the last concept in the theme question, what is it that we are going to build together? I'm positive that Cal Poly faculty, non-academic staff, and administrators are dedicated to the concept that we are all here to provide the best possible educational experience for our students. Some students may wish things could be better than they are. Some faculty members are anxious to improve certain aspects of our program. I really don't know anyone who doesn't say and believe he wants things to improve, even though many of us are very pleased that things are as good as they are. What is it that we're going to build together? It must be what you, the people of this organization, want it to be and work to build. I have great confidence in you, the people. Do you have confidence in other people in the organization? You are the people who are going to decide when things should remain the same and when they should change. You, the people, are the innovators, and you also are the stabilizers. But don't forget, I'm part of the people, too. I'll listen to your new ideas if you listen to mine. I'll help you get your new ideas implemented if you'll help me get mine implemented. But let's both be wary of tinseled gadgets sought just to make noise or flash in the sun. We should seek innovative approaches to better achieve sound educational goals and outcomes. Innovation must be a continuing attitude because educational institutions are characteristically conservative, and Cal Poly is no exception. A moment ago, I said that you, the people, not only are the innovators, but also the stabilizers. The prospect of continuous change is frightening to many people, to most people. A great deal of tension within an organization can be caused by rumored changes, by changes which occur suddenly without warning, by changes which appear to be non-productive diversions. A person who fills the role of a leader, and a leader may be found within the faculty, within the staff, within the administration, he doesn't come from one selective group, and he may sometimes lead and sometimes follow his colleagues. When he is suggesting better ways of doing things, convincing people that his idea is worthy, promoting the change that will make a process better, he is filling the role of a leader, no matter what his official title may be. The good leader is an innovator who is creative even about the methods he uses in getting people to follow him. He must be an innovator, but likewise he must consult with the followers in a continuous dialogue so that the innovation is not unilaterally conceived brainchild of one man, but an idea based upon reality that comes from contact with those who work with reality. The good administrator plays the role of a servant who maintains the status quo, keeps things running smoothly, does not create uneasiness by suggesting new ways and new methods. He is a maintainer, not an innovator. Now, the man who can be both an innovator and a servant must learn to operate in a transactional manner between the two roles of leader-administrator. He must learn to operate within a dynamic organization which should maintain its equilibrium by the process of change, stabilize, etc. He must be involved in the creative process of initiating change, and then he must be involved in the process of maintaining the status quo. No matter who suggests a basic innovative idea which would affect many people in an organization, there should be a method for the consultative process to take place. Consultation, like communications, is a two-way affair. Creative ideas for the better implementation of an organization's objectives need to be looked at, evaluated, and recommended by appropriate consultative bodies. Perhaps if there had been a consultative body to evaluate some of the innovative ideas developed by project directors of the School of Speculative Learning, Grand Academy of Logado, Gulliver would never have observed some of the things which Jonathan Swift recorded 250 years ago. After Gulliver traveled to Lilliput, you'll recall he made a voyage to Laputa, the flying or floating island. A consultative group might have saved someone about 16 years of experimental frustration. According to Swift, Gulliver was permitted to talk to one of the projectors. That's a Laputian term for the man in charge of an innovative project, a projector. Gulliver described what might have been a Haight-Ashbury progenitor, and I quote, "The projector had sooty hands and face, long ragged hair and beard, singed in several places. He had been 8 years upon a project of extracting sunbeams out of cucumbers, which were to be put in vials hermetically sealed, and let out to warm the air in raw, inclement summers. The projector said that in about 8 more years, he should be able to supply the governor's gardens with sunshine at a reasonable rate. Another projector visited by Gulliver, evidently commissioned to replace the governor's mansion with a new one, hadn't quite perfected a new architecturally contrived method for building houses. It was proposed to begin at the roof and work down to the foundation on the theory that if bees and spiders could do it, so could men. Let's return again to my contention that the answer to what we will build at Cal Poly in the future will be the sum total of many innovative ideas for changes, properly evaluated by appropriate consultative bodies representing all those people who would be affected by the proposed changes. And this would be tempered, on the other hand, by the desire of many to maintain stability, achieve equilibrium, maintain the progress already made. The question that some have been asking themselves is, will a new administration upset the apple cart? Will the new president try to change some basic concepts that have guided Cal Poly in the past? These are not imagined questions on my part. Recently, President Kramer of the Kellogg campus and I discussed the problems of operating two separate colleges with one alumni association, a status quo situation if I ever heard one. We agreed that there were more disadvantages to maintaining the status quo than in pressing for a change so that there would be two separate alumni associations. The national president, Ed Slevin, expressed reluctance to the change at first, and then finally made the motion at a recent board meeting, which has set the wheels in motion for a separate alumni association for each campus. In a letter to me explaining his recommendation, he added, "On the other hand, I have grave concern for what this means. The reason I have grave concern is because it may mean that the alumni association will not have the opportunity to maintain or help you maintain the basic philosophy." I wrote him and I reassured him that I doubted that anyone in the administration or faculty would want to change the basic philosophy of the college, although I recognized that at the very moment I wrote the reassurance, I might be able to find a number of people within the Cal Poly organization who would argue long and loud against any or a dozen possible statements of basic philosophy. Leroy Anderson, the first president of Cal Poly, said about 1905 that the basic philosophy of the school was to provide an experience which combined three elements, the head, the hand, the heart, to give a man a whole education. I wonder if any innovators since then have improved on the concept. I have been concentrating primarily on means or processes by which we can work together in building a better Cal Poly, better in the sense of always being appropriate to the times. I've said quite a lot about media or means and very little about substance or ends. My concentration during the past 4.5 months was on listening to what faculty, staff, and students had to say to me as we discussed the theme question. The concern of most people appeared to be about processes, about the difficulties caused by problems in communications, concern over lack of involvement at an appropriate level in the decision-making process, bureaucratic procedures for handling personnel matters, etc. Taking my cue from what I believe has been a great concern of faculty, staff, and students, I have been working with people throughout the organization to develop better methods where previous experience has not been too acceptable. There are many conditioned reflexes which will have to be retrained. There may be doubt as to what I mean when I say eliminate to the maximum extent possible routine paperwork. My stated desire to put the approving responsibility as close to the point of operation as good management practices will permit may take a little time before those involved will feel safe about making decisions that one time were bucked up several levels in the hierarchy. Remember McLuhan's observation, societies have always been shaped more by the nature of the media by which men communicate than by the content of the communication. I've said a great deal here today about the nature of the media, about the processes, about the significance of means, about the importance of the necessary tools and methods for maintaining an organization as a living, dynamic structure, not a dying one. I haven't talked about our standards, our present programs, our long-range plans. Mainly and purposely, I discuss principles for interpersonal relationships between individuals and groups of the larger organization, the success of which depends upon the coordinated efforts of its members. Frankly, I've left unanswered the what it is we aspire to build by working together. I have lots of ideas on the subject too, and likely every one of you here today has his own version of what we should build. Let's share that subject soon on a work group level where we can lower the barriers to communications, where each can participate in the dialogue, and where we can all try mightily to fully understand the other fellow's point of view. Thank you.
President Kennedy, the acceptance of your message is obvious. We're utilizing this occasion to honor three of our people on an occasion of attainment. And while I'm explaining what this is to be, I would like to ask the following three people to come here to the rostrum. Mr. Burlingham, Mr. Chandler, and Mr. Cook. While they're coming, I'd like to explain that it's the traditional policy of the state of California to recognize those employees who have completed 25 years of employment with the state. During the year just completed, three of our Cal Poly people have qualified for this recognition. Knowing that all of us are interested in some of the background of these employees' service with the state, I will give you a few statistics on each one. As I read the name and the information, President Kennedy will present the person with the 25-year certificate and the gold 25-year service pin. The certificate reads, to the name of the individual, in recognition of 25 years of loyal, dedicated service to the state of California, and this is signed by President Robert E. Kennedy. Mr. Kennedy, I'll hand you these three. Herbert H. Burlingham, head of the Agricultural Education Department. Burley has been our agricultural teacher trainer since 1948. From 1942 to 1948, he was a supervisor of agricultural education with the State Department of Education. And prior to that time, Burley served 11 years as the director of agriculture at the following three California high schools, Willits, Madera, and Paso Robles. Burley's total years of service to education, therefore, have been considerably greater than the 25 years of state service for which he's being recognized this morning. Mr. Burlingham. Everett M. Chandler, Dean of Students. Chan is and has been our Dean of Students for the 17 and a half years he has been at Cal Poly. The other 7.5 years, making up Chan's 25 years of state service, were with the Management Analysis Section of the State Department of Finance, the State Personnel Board, and the U.S. Army Air Force. Mr. Chandler. David Cook, Associate Dean, Curriculum and Instruction. All of Dave's 25 years of state service have been with Cal Poly. Dave came to Poly in the fall of 1941 as a faculty member in the Electrical Engineering and Mathematics departments. In the early 1950s, he gradually assumed assignments in the Curriculum Development and Analysis area. As the enrollment increased and departments and courses were added, more and more of Dave's time was required in instructional administration. For the past several years, Dave's full-time assignment has been in the curriculum area. Mr. Cook.
According to my calculations, he should have got it last year.
And this concludes our program this morning. Thank you.